You know what you're listening to?
Is that a trick question?
It's the I Still Love This Game podcast with your host, Matthew Damien.
He's an idiot. Don't listen to this. He's an idiot.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 33 of the I Still Love This Game podcast. In today's show, I'm going to be covering a lot of topics ranging from Golden State's injury concerns to Kyrie Irving's injury concerns to drama in San Antonio to the Portland and Oklahoma game, to the Rockets, to Philly, to the NBA East in general, to why the Monstars choked against Michael Jordan and the Looney Tunes, etc., etc. So let's get right into it. And obviously, I want to begin with Golden State and Steph, and the news coming out yesterday that Steph Curry will be out at least till the second round. Now, this sounds familiar. This is a familiar situation. Golden State has dealt with this before. And if any team is capable of covering up an offensive hole left by Steph Curry's absence, it is Golden State. Now, when I said they've dealt with this before, if you think back to the 2016 playoffs, I think it was Game 3 or Game 4. I think it was Game 4, actually, in the first half of Game 4. In the first round up against Houston Rockets, Steph Curry was injured, and he didn't return until, I want to say it was Game 4 of the the second round against Portland. So they know how to make those adjustments. They've got Livingston to come in, and now of course you've got Durant who can take the offensive load, as well as Thompson who's bottled up as it is. And if you do think back to the 2016 playoffs, when Curry was injured, Thompson was the leading playoff, had the highest average in the playoffs until Curry returned. It was around 27.5 points per game. So he's definitely capable of leading. Now, we know that Curry's game complements Durant's and vice versa. Do we know if Thompson's game complements Durant's? Should they put Thompson as the 1A or the 1B and Durant being the 1A or 1B? Right now, Thompson's a distant third when Curry and Durant are playing. So that'll be interesting. The other thing to keep in mind is back then in 2016, way back then in 2016, such a long time ago, right? Now, back in 2016, Livingston was younger, Iguodala was younger, they had Harrison Barnes. There were players that were capable of stepping up on any particular night and filling that role in terms of scoring. If you're going to tell me that it's just Thompson and Durant and the rest of the complementary players have gotten so much older, I mean, you put Draymond Green in there, or some nights he can get you 30, so the other nights he's going to get you 6. But he's not a consistent player. None of these guys are consistent players anymore. So that could be big problems for them, because if all of a sudden you've only got two genuine scorers and the other guys are really hit or miss, who knows what Golden State's going to be walking into? Because we don't even know what the playoff matchups are. We know that what the top eight probably is going to be, but there is one game separating, just one game separating the fifth seed and the eighth seed. And, of course, the teams that we're talking about here are the Pelicans, the Spurs, the Timberwolves, and the Jazz. Any four of those teams could easily wind up at the number seven seed. Honestly, as well, Oklahoma is closer to the eighth seed than what they are to the three seed. They're two games back now of Portland, and they're only 1.5 games ahead of the Jazz, who are sitting in the eighth spot. So we don't know who they're going to be lined up against. What if they face Oklahoma in the first round, or New Orleans, even with DeMarcus Cousins out, or, you know, Utah's surging, or the Spurs? Who knows what's going to go on with Kawhi Leonard, and we'll get to that in due time in this episode. But my point is, Golden State could be in a bit of trouble here. And the other thing I wanted to mention, though, is they may have us completely fooled. Curry's from the Popovich coaching tree, and Popovich loves to rest his players. And we've seen the backlash towards tanking in recent years by the NBA. And maybe this is a self-imposed releasing of tension and pressure by Golden State. Because in a week's time from now, we're going to be talking about how all the pressure is on Houston. They're going to win 65 games or thereabouts. They're going to have the number one seed. They will have completely run away with the best regular season record in franchise history as well as in the NBA for this season. Harden is deservedly the MVP this season. Chris Paul has a lot to prove, as does Harden in the playoffs, as does D'Antoni, as does pretty much everyone not named Trevor Ariza on that team. Despite the fact that Golden State has made three straight finals, have won two titles, they were one game away from a three-peat, all the talk's going to be on Houston. So who's to say that this isn't, one, to rest up Curry, because he is injury-prone, and maybe they're erring on the side of caution. I'm not saying they're faking an injury or anything like that, but is it possible that they are going super cautious? Not just with him, by the way. Durant is out. Thompson has been out. Honestly, since the All-Star break, I can't remember all four of their All-Stars playing together. In fact, this year, I can't remember all four of them playing together, with the exception of the All-Star game. So, but the point that I'm trying to make here is, it could be mind games that we just don't know yet. But if it's not mind games, then it's pretty serious. And it might be time that we really reevaluated who the favorites are in the NBA. Personally, I've said for a while now that I don't think Golden State's going to win the title this year. And that's when they were healthy. Now, if they're not healthy, then obviously I'm not going to change my pick. I went with Oklahoma, but I also said that I think Houston will beat them too if they were to meet in the playoffs. And of course, I stand by that. But what this does remind me of, and the Lakers didn't do this. They didn't rest players or have injury concerns, major injury concerns. But it reminds me of the 2002 Lakers going up against the Sacramento Kings. And all the pressure was on Sacramento. Quite honestly, Sacramento should have won that series. But the Lakers, a very controversial series, especially Game 6, the fourth quarter of Game 6. Look it up. If you don't know it, then you need to know it as a basketball fan. You need to know this stuff. The NBA does try to hide these kind of controversies in due time. But if you're a genuine fan, you'll know about that game and that series. But the lead up to it, it reminds me so much of that in terms of, okay, you've got playoff history between the Kings and the Lakers, just like you have between the Rockets and the Warriors. You have an emerging MVP candidate, consistent MVP candidate, honestly, in Chris Webber. You've got that in James Harden. You've got a coach that's never won it before, but has been close so many times, Rick Alderman and Mike D'Antoni. You've got the addition of Chris Paul and Mike Bibby. Of course, that probably sounds sacrilegious to a lot of people, but just keep in mind, Mike Bibby was a very good player. He was probably the best player in that series. Not the most important or the most dominant, but he was the best player in that series up against the Lakers. He was very, very good. At least their best offensive player or their best scoring threat. I can't put him ahead of Chris Webber. Webber did everything for those guys. But in terms of scoring, he was their most consistent. He was their number one option. And he wasn't a great point guard, even though he was technically a point guard. But that was Webber and Vlade Divac who really ran that offense. It was a beautiful offense to watch. If you get a chance, watch some of those games from those early Sacramento Kings, from the early 2000 Sacramento Kings, and you'll see what I'm talking about. One of the best teams, one of the top five teams to never win a title. But yeah, I'm getting a little bit off topic here, but it does remind me of that rivalry. And it would be great to see these guys meet in the conference finals, but we do have obviously Oklahoma and Portland looming. And both of those teams are more than capable of causing an upset in the second round. Or the first round, depending on where Oklahoma ends up. But we'll get to that in due time. Now, Golden State's not the only team with championship aspirations that is facing huge injury concerns. And Kyrie Irving's, look, there's no, even with James Harden and the way that he scores, there is no team that is a championship contender that relies more on one scorer or one player to create offense than Kyrie Irving in Boston. Last couple of years, you could say James Harden, sure, but not with Chris Paul now. And Gordon Hayward, of course, being injured, and Jaylen Brown being out for quite a bit of time as well. So if I'll say this right now. If Kyrie Irving is not back by the playoffs for the first round, I'd be surprised if they make it out of the first round. Because right now they're lining up, I believe they're lining up with Milwaukee. Milwaukee has a lot of talent. Remember what Milwaukee nearly did to Toronto last year. Now, Toronto was a very different team in the playoffs to what we're seeing now in the regular season. But they really slapped up the Raptors in a few of those games. And I thought they were the better team out of the Raptors. And it was kind of validated by that, by the fact that the Raptors were completely steamrolled by the Cavs. So if they had to play the... and they've gotten better, of course, Milwaukee than what they were last year because the addition of Bledsoe. And of course the emergence of Giannis. But if they had to play Boston in the first round, now of course I'm not discounting Boston and their ability to just find a next man up kind of mentality. And you can get away with that every so often, but at some point you're playing with fire, you're going to get burnt, especially in a 7-game series. And I would be surprised if they would beat Milwaukee if Kyrie Irving's not available or is at 50%. I know some people might think that's crazy, because usually you don't see these kinds of competitive matchups, especially in the Eastern Conference in the first round, because it's just there's just no talent. Well, in previous years you haven't had the consistent talent from the number one seed down to the eighth seed. But Milwaukee is a talented team, and Boston, if they don't have Haywood, if they don't have Brown, if Kyrie Irving's at 50%, where is the offense going to come from? Tatum? Rozier? Horford? Morris, maybe? Monroe? Oh, that's not good. If you're going up against a loaded Milwaukee team who hasn't put it together yet, but they do play very hard in the playoffs. Forget last year. How about the year against the Bulls when, I think it was 2015, I'm going to say it was, with Derrick Rose and those guys, and they had Michael Carter-Williams as one of their better players, and they went to 6 in that series, and they played them very hard. That was when Derrick Rose, the same year that Derrick Rose hit that bank shot game winner against the Cavs. But some big injury concerns out there in Boston, and I'm very worried about them, because as I said, if Irving's not healthy, and of course, Haywood, you cannot, if you're pinning your hopes on Gordon Haywood returning, then yeah, you got some issues. Next up, we're going to change the format a little bit here because this is actually a user question, but it ties in with the injury theme. So we're going to talk about the San Antonio drama. And where's all this come from? We know all these years we've been hearing about what a tightly run ship the San Antonio Spurs with Popovich that have been the standard of the NBA, class organization, blah, blah, blah. What has happened? Kawhi Leonard, I don't know what has happened, but he seems all out of sorts with Popovich. And Kawhi Leonard's a class act himself. He's never done anything wrong. He's never been in trouble with anybody, never called out teammates, always played hard, played hard on both sides of the ball, deserved finals MVP. It was a deserved MVP candidate last year. And there seems to be a lot of trouble brewing underneath the surface there. And, you know, I'm going to bring up LaMarcus Aldridge, because LaMarcus Aldridge, before this season, when he was a deserved all-star, the 2 seasons before that, he was a shell of himself. People forget he was an MVP, a legitimate MVP candidate out in Portland, and Damian Lillard was the complimentary player towards him. And take a look at what happened with him and how miserable he's been. And the thing was, it wasn't that he wasn't putting forth the effort. They just weren't running plays for this guy. they were purposely going away from, I don't know why, but it was just, it was such a waste of talent. Because, as I said, up in Portland, he was, you know, remember the whole, because his name's LaMarcus, they called him La MVP and all, you know, very creative guys, top stuff. And to think that's the same town that Nike's from. Well, I guess that makes sense, right? But my point is, Popovich, here's maybe the dirty little secret about the Spurs. Maybe Popovich isn't this coaching genius that we think he is. And more that I think about it, the comparisons with Belichick are probably spot on. Because Belichick lets his ego get in the way of him far too many times as well. Just think back to the Super Bowl with Malcolm Butler. Easily their best defensive back, probably their best defender overall. He's the reason they beat, or they came out of there with a victory against Seattle in the Super Bowl. Otherwise, they're losing that one. And the point that I'm trying to make here is Popovich has shown that he's got a hell of an ego. And we're meant to believe, here's the insulting part about all this, right? We're meant to believe that veterans, of all people, how many games has Manu Ginobili missed in the last 4 or 5 years? Same with Tony Parker. And we're meant to believe that these are the guys calling out Kawhi Leonard? Are you kidding me? And if they are, they can go to hell. Because we don't know what Kawhi Leonard feels when he walks on his ankle or his knee, or I don't even know what injury it is, right? But if you can't prove what that man is feeling, then shut up. Everyone that says that he should be playing needs to shut up. They really do, because there's no way we can prove what's going on there. So if you can't prove it, just be quiet. Having a players-only meeting, which is a load of BS anyway, especially in that organization, because everything is run by Popovich. He micromanages. Let's not kid ourselves. Do you think that if he didn't want a players-only meeting to happen, that it would happen? I don't think so. It absolutely would not happen. But in a players-only meeting, if they're going to call out Kawhi Leonard, what good does that do? What good does that do? If Kawhi Leonard has checked out mentally and he doesn't want to play, what good do you think calling him out is going to do? It's just going to validate why he doesn't want to play. That's just common sense. But I don't think it's a players at all. I think this is all Popovich. And I mentioned before the dirty little secret. Maybe he's not this mad genius or this mad scientist that we think that he's a basketball guru. If he's a basketball guru, let me just ask you this. You're up by, 4 or 5 points with 30 seconds to go. You know that a team's going to start shooting threes. You want to get stops. Why wouldn't you have a rebounder on the court so in case you get that stop, you can get the ball back? That's exactly what happened to the Spurs in Game 6 of the 2013 Finals. And it happened twice. It happened twice. And Chris Bosh, of all people, a guy that has been maligned for being soft, was able to get the two of the biggest offensive rebounds in back-to-back possessions. LeBron breaks the three. Chris Bosh gets a board, kicks it out to LeBron. LeBron hits a three. Next play down, LeBron breaks a three, Chris Bosh gets a rebound, kicks it out to Ray Allen, who's one of the biggest shots in NBA history. That was with Tim Duncan sitting on the bench. And maybe their biggest player, from a size standpoint, was Boris Diaw. They had Boris Diaw there, and they wondered why they couldn't get the board. Greg Popovich, I don't want to keep bringing this stuff up, but why does he get a pass on everything that goes wrong? This is ridiculous. This entire situation is on him. If he's such a great coach and a great leader, he needs to get these guys back together. They are lost. They are completely lost. LaMarcus Aldridge has had such a great season this year, and all the talk is about Kawhi Leonard. This is insanity. And Popovich, being like a little coward, is hiding behind his players in Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili. It's not even really Manu, actually. Manu just said that he's not waiting for Kawhi to come back because he doesn't think he's going to come back. Now, that's not him saying that that there's no chance that Kawhi Leonard's coming back. He's just saying mentally he's not allowing himself to be hoping that Kawhi Leonard comes back to save the season. He's putting it on his shoulders. There's nothing wrong with him saying that. But it's more Tony Parker. So he's going to stand behind his, 38, 37, whatever year old point guard who doesn't even start anymore. Grow some, you know what? And if you've got an issue with it, Popovich, do it. Don't hide behind it. You've got no problems getting up and saying that the United States is full of racist individuals and saying controversial statements there, but yet you won't call out your own player if you think that he's he should be playing when he's not? That's disgraceful. That is absolutely disgraceful. And I do not want to hear for one second how they are a class organization when the head of that organization is hiding behind their point guard who's calling out their star player who's injured. That's Kardashian-esque. That's LeBron-esque. That's not classy. That is so passive-aggressive, it's ridiculous, and it's gutless and it's spineless. And quite honestly, for all these coaching mistakes that he's made in his career, I am very surprised that he lacks the backbone to actually get up and say what he wants. He's going to hide behind his point guard. What an absolute joke. That's disgraceful. That is absolutely disgraceful. And if Kawhi Leonard has a problem with Popovich, as I said before, where he might be feeling validated after the players only meeting, I completely side with him. This is one of the most head-scratching situations that I've ever seen. And if this was, say, Tyronn Lue, people would be calling for his head. They'd say, he's got to go. He's got to get cut. And the funny thing in all of this is LeBron, and I don't want to throw LeBron down to this because he's got nothing to do with it, but LeBron does the same kind of garbage, and yet they want to say that LeBron and Popovich could coexist. Oh my. If that happens, that would be entertaining. Not from a basketball standpoint, but from a drama standpoint. Just the same way watching a train wreck is entertaining. You watch it coming from a mile away. People think it would be a successful situation. Oh boy. Oh boy. No, it won't be. So, we're going to go from a complete disaster to one of the true success stories in the NBA this year, and that's the Rockets. So I touched on them a little bit before when I was talking about Golden State and how they've completely blown Golden State away in the race for the number one seed and home court advantage, obviously. And I'll get to them in a minute, but there's something that is on my mind that I'd like to talk about, and that's how flawed the playoffs are. And there's not much you can do about this situation, but prepare yourself that this might become pretty frustrating. So usually if there's a flaw in the playoffs, I'd be like, okay, they should fix it because of this, but there's nothing you really do. But if the standings hold up and Oklahoma stays as a number four seed, and obviously Houston is staying as a number one seed, potentially we're going to have the 1v2, or not the 1v2, but the 1v4 second round series between Oklahoma and Houston. Now on the other side of the bracket, and of course the Eastern Conference as well, but the other side of the West, if Golden State is injured, and they're falling apart at the seams, and they get bounced in the second round, or they're just playing at like 60% because they just don't have the players. We are really going to get the NBA finals, not in the conference finals. We're going to get the NBA finals in the second round. Now, this has happened before. I think to the Spurs Suns in 2007. That was the year, you know, Robert Horry hip checked Steve Nash, and then Boris Diaw and Amari Stoudemire were suspended for that, for coming off the bench, because that's such an egregious act, right? Thanks, David Stern, for that. That was very nice of you. Now, you could obviously, what the NBA needs to look into, it doesn't help this situation out, but they need to look into reseeding. So if the number one seed gets bounced in the first round, because that's what happened that year, right? If the number one, Dallas was knocked out. If the number one seed gets knocked out, then the number two seed should play the lowest seed, just like the number one seed. Why should the number eight seed essentially get the luck of the draw and play the winner of the 4-5 when the number two seed has to play the three seed? That makes zero sense to me. That's silly. Conversely, if the number six seed beats the number three seed, why should the number two seed get the joys of that or the spoils of that, whereas the number one seed would have to play the 4 or 5 seed, which theoretically is the better team? So that's something they should really look into. And, of course, that's not even changing conferences or anything like that. It's just basic reseed. I mean, the NFL does that. And it's a real basic and fair system. The number one seed or the top seed in the conference will play the lowest seed, and the second seed will play the other one. So, for example, if you're the number one seed and the six seed knocks off the three seed, they're playing the three seed. They're not playing the winner of the three versus six. They're playing, because if the three seed wins, then they're going to play the winner of the 4-5. That's just common sense. It's just basic fairness. Honestly, the NBA reminds me more and more of a lazy government bureaucracy. Like, some of this stuff that should be fixed just isn't, and they spend all day, you know, meddling in, you know, virtual signaling for SJW policies. Why? We don't care about that. We want to see the best basketball out there. Anyway, I got a little bit off topic. I want to talk about the Houston Rockets now. And I don't want to get ahead of myself here when I talk about the Rockets, but earlier on in the season, I said how impressed I was with Chris Paul, identifying what this team needs and filling those gaps in. And then say, okay, we need leadership, we need defense, we need, you know, me to at times take over on offense and carry it when James Harden's struggling a little bit. Oh, sure, I can do all those things. And he's done it. He's been excellent. But it's not just him. It's all of them. They've all embraced this attitude of whatever it takes. They're a scary team. And if Golden State is healthy, I hope that happens. If Golden State's healthy, I'd love to see them square off against this team. But let's not allow Golden State to get off the hook here if they're not healthy, because Golden State, for the last, the first championship they won, every single team was injured at the point guard position. And they've lucked out so many times with injuries. Look at Kawhi Leonard's injury in the conference finals when the Spurs were up double digits in the fourth quarter or third quarter, whenever it was. Remember Zaza Pachulia, right? So they don't get an excuse. If the Warriors are injured, just eat it. Because the Rockets, if they win the title this year, they are very, very worthy NBA champions. And a part of me hopes they do. I'm trying to be as impartial as I possibly can. But a part of me really hopes they do. Because people think I'm this hater. They think that I enjoy seeing players like ripping on players such as LeBron or Harden or Curry or whoever, right? When they fail. No, I like to see him overcome. I'm going to be honest about it. I'm going to be skeptical about certain players who have bad histories, and that includes Harden, that includes Chris Paul, that includes D'Antoni, and it includes the Toronto Raptors. It includes plenty of teams. But I want to see them reach their potential. If Chris Paul gets his championship, he skyrockets in the all-time greatest players list. He goes from about 45 to 50, that range, all the way up to potentially 30 to 35. Same with James Harden, by the way. D'Antoni goes from being, a cult hero type of a coach to one of the greatest coaches of all time in terms of revolutionizing the game. He really brought in this style of put as many points up as possible and we'll count them up and we'll see if we have more than the other team. And the rest of the NBA has embraced that. He really revolutionized basketball from a coaching standpoint. If he gets a ring on top of all that, one ring is the same amount as what Larry Brown has, by the way, then we've got to put him in the Hall of Fame, and then we've got to recognize him as potentially a top 10 coach of all time. I want to see it happen. I really do. So if you want to call me a hater or whatever, just think about what I just said there. I want to see this team do well, and I want to see them win a championship. And I've been very vocal about my criticisms of Chris Paul, James Harden, and Mike D'Antoni. So I want to see them do it. I would like to see them do it. And even if they are unsuccessful this year in winning the title, they have exceeded expectations. So I'm happy for them. I really am. Go get your jewelry. I want to come back to me when you got your ring, and then we'll really be able to have some fun as we re-rank our greatest players of all time list with the amended rankings. Now, moving on to a couple of other contenders in the West. Notice there's not a whole lot of contenders in the East. Surprise, surprise. Portland and Oklahoma. I'm not sure if you guys were able to catch that game, especially the way that the tournament's been going and all the great games on that. Love to talk about that on the podcast, by the way, but no, NBA only, damn it. We're going to stick with it. But yes, Portland, Oklahoma, excellent game. And there's going to be a lot of talk about what's wrong with Carmelo. He's just getting older. And he is sort of a one-dimensional player. It kind of reminds me of when Barkley went to Houston, and then at some point his age just, his body just, the limitations were too much. But he's not as bad as that. So let's not go to that extreme just yet. But also keep in mind that Portland has played some incredible basketball since the All-Star break. And they're sitting pretty good at number three, especially now with the uncertainty of Golden State. I mean, who would be shocked if they made the conference finals? I mean, I wouldn't be. Especially the way that Portland and Damian Lillard in specifically really steps up and play, and goes at Golden State. So that would be an interesting series. But the point I'm trying to make here is it's not like Oklahoma dropped a winnable game against a crappy team. Portland's a good team. And Portland was up by nearly 20 in the first half, and they brought it all the way back. Now, should Oklahoma have won? Yes. Yes, they should have. There was some situations, especially offensive rebounding situations, that they need to fix up. Now, is my confidence wavering a bit because I did pick Oklahoma to win the title? Keep in mind that was early on. That was before the season even started. So I'm not as confident as what I was when Roberson was, when they made their run with Roberson. But what I do like about Oklahoma is they really don't get blown out a lot of the time. A lot of these games are very winnable games. So I like their chances, and I like the pressure they put on teams to have to do things like get offensive rebounds to scrape out a victory. They force teams to play their best to beat them. Now, of course, Oklahoma is very inconsistent, and they're also losing to pretty bad teams as well. But guess what? They're not going to be playing bad teams in the playoffs. They're going to be playing good teams in the playoffs. And for whatever reason, they elevate their games. They also drop their games to the bad teams. But as I just said, they won't have to worry about those bad teams. They're not playing them. They'll be worrying about the good teams, and they have a history of elevating their performances. So for all the good things I said about Houston in the previous segment, what you could see is Houston not even making the conference finals because they could run right into Oklahoma. And Oklahoma has more than enough firepower to run with them and at least challenge them. That would be a great series, by the way. It would be incredible. I mean, are you kidding me? You would have the two best backcourts, at least now with Curry injured, in the NBA going at each other. Chris Paul and James Harden versus Paul George and Russell Westbrook. Are you kidding? That would be great basketball. And we're going to finish up the show by answering one more user question. And times have changed because this question was sent about a week ago, a little bit longer. And it was asking whether I thought Philly could cause an upset in the first round. Look, I could go a little bit further than this because Philly is now fourth. And they will be going up against Indiana in the first round if it holds. And if it holds, I wouldn't consider that an upset in the slightest if they beat Indiana. Quite honestly, Philly has to be the favorite in that series. But I could go a step further. The next round, they would be playing against Toronto, and could I see Philly upsetting Toronto? No. No, let me take it back. I could see that happen, but I wouldn't pick it happening. I would be surprised if it happens, but it wouldn't be a situation like Dallas losing to Golden State, like jaw dropped. Like, what is going on here? Or Virginia losing to that Golden Retriever team in the tournament. What are they? University of Maryland, Baltimore, whatever it is. The jaw dropping situation. My jaw wouldn't drop like that. Now, do I think that'd be good for basketball if that happened? Of course, Philly's a hotbed. It's been a dormant hotbed for so long because, you know, think back to how lively that city was and that region was when Allen Iverson was playing great. Now you got Embiid, you got Simmons, you got plenty of young talent. There's plenty of players to be excited about on that team. And if they were to make the conference finals, that would be incredible, especially if they would go up against Boston or Cleveland. Boston, because you got that rivalry between Boston and Philly, and then, which would be great to see that revive. Everyone talks about Boston LA. Boston Philly was just as intense of a rivalry in the early 80s, and of course in the 60s with Wilt versus Russell. It'd be great to see that get relived. And also the young talent on display. Forget Kyrie Irving for a second. Think about Jaylen Brown and Tatum versus Embiid and Simmons. That'd be fun to watch. Or you've got, you know, the War Horses in Cleveland going up against Philly, the players that don't really know any better. And would it surprise me if they were to knock off Cleveland or Boston if they got to the conference finals? No, it wouldn't surprise me any more than it would if they would have beat Toronto. So we could see them make the NBA finals. It is that kind of, it's been that kind of a year, especially in the East. It is pretty wide open. They're not very good teams, but it is still wide open. It's all relative, right? They probably wouldn't even make the playoffs in the West, but they have a chance to make the NBA finals. Tell me again why conferences are a good thing. Anyway, thanks so much guys for listening to the podcast. You can check us out on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio now. We got accepted on iHeartRadio, Google Play, and of course, IStillLoveThisGame.com. So you have a myriad of options to share it, to listen to it. Just enjoy it. Continue to send through the questions, and I'll try to answer them. Thank you so much, and I'll catch you guys next time.